Good evening and welcome to Baseball Talk right here on Whiteman TV. Delighted to be along with you again. I'm Steve Fitzsimmons, as always. And, of course, Rob Whiteman along to chat some baseball with us. And in the studio tonight, we're delighted to have a special guest. This gentleman is going to be organizing and hosting the Ontario Amateur Softball Association Tournament in Palmerston next weekend, July 20th, 21st. And Wayne Martin is his name. And Wayne, thanks for joining us. And also, thank you for what you do in the area for baseball as well.
Yeah, it's one of my hobbies, I guess, over the years. But yeah, fast pitch has been a really good thing for my family and myself. So,
and it has a really strong history in this area as well, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's back in the earlier days, like 70s and 80s, like I think pretty well every small town had a fastball team. And you used to have to go through two or three of their teams. I remember playing Fullerton and Mitchell and all those teams just to get to the next level. So because of the decline in teams and stuff, they've got a different format now. But the competition, if you're a competitive person, it brings your competitive nature back. And it's a level of ball where now, in these days, in our Bantam tournament this July 19th, 20th, and 21st now, four teams are getting to go to the Canadian Championship in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you have a history, of course, in the past with the Palmerston Imperials, and your team won the Canadian Championship in 2017. But this year, a lot of the local players are actually playing for a number of other teams as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, some of our local players are, we have three boys playing for Shell Lake. We have a player from that played with us is playing for Simcoe. We have a player that's played with us on the Canadian team, and he's playing in Napanee. So it just happens that Napanee, Fisherville, Simcoe, and Shell Lake are the four teams that finished in the top of the elimination tournament are going to Saskatoon. So, yeah, we were really fortunate with the players that are still playing are really high-skilled kids, and they're all local kids. So that's always satisfying, too.
What age group is this?
They call it U16, so it's Bantam age.
Right.
So it's 15 and 16-year-old.
Gotcha. Okay. And so this tournament, I mean, it sounds like, in speaking to you off air, it's kind of gone beyond your expectation in terms of the number of teams that have entered this year.
Yeah, with Bantam age, like the teams tend to, usually the teams tend to reduce
right.
In terms of numbers. So I was planning like 8 to 12 teams. Well, then I get a call that we've got 17. So that led to some more scheduling of diamond time and that kind of stuff.
So how does the tournament break down? I assume there's an A and a B division?
Or? Yeah, in the elimination tournament, which was two weekends ago in Grafton, the top eight teams go in the A pool. And this year, nine teams are in the B pool.
And so Saskatoon, that's coming up very soon in the near future as well.
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks. There's not much of a turnaround to raise money.
Right.
So we're trying to help some of the individual players that played for us do that.
Right. And so obviously you'd be happy if a lot of people attended and supported this endeavor that are watching across, you know, Whiteman TV's coverage area as well.
Yeah, I guess one of the outside of winning the Canadian Championship, which was an honor in itself, like the number one thing was the number of people in the Palmerston ballpark. Two summers ago, it was phenomenal. So we figure about 500. And it just happened that four Ontario teams made the end. So it ended up being us in Shell Lake. So the local people from the other towns like Tavistock and those communities, a lot of them stayed around to see who was going to win. Because all summer, like pretty well over this era of ball players, like our competitions was Palmerston, Shell Lake, Napanee, Tavistock. So it still runs true right now. Really good ball organizations and very competitive team.
I grew up in Clifford. Through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, fastball was pretty big in town with four aces back then. Mm-hmm. My uncles both played for them. What do you attribute to the decline in the amount of teams and the erosion, I guess, of some of the leagues that were around here? And, I mean, they belong to the Blue Water League. For yeah. All those years, just how is it that we've seen such a drop-off?
Yeah, some of it at the top end of this, like there used to be major money for the senior teams and stuff, and it kind of filtered down. I would say the other part of it, for me, I think like people make a lot more choices in the summertime now than like ball was in the summer, hockey was in the winter, but now there's a lot of people have moved away from fast pitch. And the unfortunate part about it, it's actually fairly reasonable financially to run fastball teams. But yeah, we don't have like every town had like Clifford had Reg Walls and you know, we had Morris Wilson and all those guys and Vince Mullen, all those guys from and all had really good ball teams, but all those teams are pretty well gone to the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
The Imperials, when we adopted the name, I guess the second time around, we moved into the Blue Water League, and that really made us a lot better. Mm-hmm. Doug Neal started that league, and it was meant for competitive teams, and it was really competitive. So it allowed you to play at a higher level, like provincial, OASA provincials and stuff. So,
tell us about some of the local guys that people can expect to see in this tournament.
Yeah, a gentleman by the name of Scott Cyril is coaching the Team Ontario U19. So in that program, 2003, which is second year Bantams, he'll be there scouting some of them. So some of the names locally are Gavin Gibbons and Aiden Yard, Keegan Fisher. Well, Keegan was just on here catching. There's probably the best player, and maybe in Canada, if not, and definitely in Ontario, and Connor Brooks. He pitches for Napanee. And then Nolan Baltina, he's the young guy from that's moved to Houston, Texas, but he's back this summer playing for Simcoe. So some of the players that were on our Canadian team have got spread out and are still playing. I think the other thing that's happened is where before, like individually, like Clifford could probably compete in the OASA and Palmerston could, all the small towns could. Then it got to be you couldn't. Right. You had to, towns started joining. And when you start joining, the grassroots starts to fade away, right?
Right. So for fans, is there an admission charge to get in and watch?
Yeah, like, so we didn't change it. We for a two-day tournament, we always had it $3 a day and $5 to get in. Well, we've left it, and now for $5, you get 3 days of ball.
It's amazing.
So, we don't, this tournament, we don't go out to really make a whole lot of money, but just keep ball going and keep the level of, for the town of Minto, like you bring 17 teams into your community, some the spinoff is going to be really good for their restaurants. And
yeah, absolutely.
Tim Hortons and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and we go back to how you're going to help out some of the local kids with the funding to be able to go to Saskatoon at the Canadians from this tournament.
Yeah. The money we make, dedicated some of it to the Isaac Foundation. We have a young boy in our town that is part of that.
And what does that do in particular?
It's a rare syndrome,
okay,
of health issue. So it takes money to make all this stuff happen. We're still working on off the Canadian money. We're looking at the second scoreboard for facility improvement. The Agriculture Society in Palmerston helped us out, and I still have an IOU for them, so I'll be able to pay that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That kind of stuff. And then the two tournaments that we're running cost some money, and Minto Minor Ball and our Optimist Club and our U14 girls peewee team are all going to share in the money because it takes a certain amount of money to run those organizations and keep things going. One of the interesting things about ball is an example would be a little town like Grand Valley. They've got a great big subdivision. When you drive into Grand Valley, there's mm-hmm. a great big sub. There this summer they're up to 10 teams.
Wow.
So as the city people start moving in and their kids are looking for stuff to do and they go into those small towns, like really got my fingers crossed it's going to be a cycle up again. So the girls ball is really healthy. The boys ball needs some help. That's what it comes down to.
So with four of the entrants in this tournament obviously heading to the Canadian championships, I mean, obviously this would be a great tune-up for being successful in that endeavor as well.
Yeah, what they've done with the provincial tournament that we're hosting, they moved it ahead of the Canadians, and that's exactly what it's for. not only provincial champion, they're trying to keep, you know, that provincially it used to be kind of the elite thing to do. So, but it will be a tune-up for the four teams going for sure. Because there's a good chance, everything being equal, they'll be at the end battling it out.
You mentioned the opportunities for girls, and it seems to be a little bit more. I have three daughters, and they've all tried ball, and there seems to be a lot of opportunity for them somewhere in some of these smaller towns. Do you know why? Like, I mean, I found that kind of interesting that they're compared to just there doesn't seem to be a lot of the boys.
Yeah, the influence with the girls is like you can get school deals. Both in Canada now and the United States.
Yep.
Canada's getting better at supporting the university level. Where boys, the most you're going to get out of it is make the national team.
Mm-hmm.
So the school route is there for girls. It's not there for not there for boys. It's probably the biggest or the most prominent example.
It's interesting to see that the girls' game is actually on the incline and growing in Ontario and in Canada, in particular for fastball.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some really good fastball players on the girls' side go to the States for different scholarships and that kind of stuff. And, like, we've had we're starting the university level and the college level in Ontario anyway, that there's starting to be more teams playing at that level, both, yeah, like in the game of fast pitch. So they're always out scouting for girls too. And, like all these small towns you go through, every once in a while, like, there's an outstanding player. When they leave that small town to go to play at a higher level, that hurts the small town a little bit. But you got to have avenues for playing the game, and you got to have avenues for advancement. And if you're a girl that can play the game and get your schooling out of it, that's a good thing too.
You know, you make an interesting point about when a player leaves, you know, it definitely hurts the team. But I wonder, in some ways, does them playing and doing so well inspire other kids to play?
Oh, I'm sure it does. Like, I've had granddaughters play softball, and they've been tutored by some really good people that have been in the national ladies program or went in the States and brought back. And they most of those people are willing to share their skill level and help our kids out. So,
I guess the name that comes to mind for me is Barb Wright. From Palmerston. She's just a couple years older than me.
Phenomenal pitcher.
Yep. I can remember as a kid going down to the new ball diamond, which they named after her, and watching her hit balls out. Well,
yeah,
most of us couldn't do it.
Yeah, she's a rare commodity because she became an All-American too.
Wow.
In Missouri. So, like, she's kind of the top end of the top end. Yeah, she was a really good pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, my one granddaughter got recruited by the lady that caught her when she played in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Okay.
As she moved along. So it just, the majority of those people stay in the game as much as they can. And if they don't have kids that are playing the game, they teach it. And that's a good example in this area is Doug Neal. Phenomenal pitching coach. Phenomenal. And the one thing that Doug does that a lot of people don't do is develop pitcher mentally. Right? So. We helped get the OASA now has a Hall of Fame. So we were lucky enough to help get Doug in, get him nominated in. So the Hall of Fame's 2 years old. So we were really glad to see that he got nominated and he got elected into it. So it was great.
Good.
Awesome. Just a final thought on what you'd like people to know and about the tournament upcoming.
Yeah, I think, like, the best Bantam teams in Ontario, all the ones that are moving on, and even there's probably about 7 or 8 that are in the A grouping, like have a lot of talent. The skill level, the people that came to watch the Canadians and Pee Wee were amazed at the talent that was out there. And all your better Bantam ball players will be in Palmerston on July 19th, 20th, and 21st.
July 19th, 20th, 21st, it's the place to be, Palmerston, to see all these young folks in the Ontario Amateur Softball Association tournament being hosted in Palmerston. And really appreciate your time, Wayne, and good luck with the tournament.
Thank you very much.
That's Wayne Martin, and we will be back with a little more right after this on Baseball Talk. Welcome back to Baseball Talk on Waitman TV. I'm Steve Fitzsimmons along with Rob Waitman. And we want to say thanks to Wayne Martin who joined us in the first segment to talk about this upcoming tournament in Palmerston. But let's move on. And we have some other great topics to discuss tonight. And one of them is Tyler Skaggs. Of course, you know, an untimely death recently. Pitcher with the Anaheim Angels, Rob. And I mean, the tribute that he received from his teammates the other night was a little overwhelming, I think, for a lot of people, where it brought them to tears. First of all, I mean, they all wore his jersey that evening, and the Anaheim pitchers pitched a no-hitter to win that baseball game. And then, as you can see on the footage, every member of the team and their staff as well took their Skaggs jersey and put it on the mound. I believe it was 35 jerseys that were put on the mound. That's his mother that you're watching right now that threw out the first pitch as well. I mean, Rob, I can't recall anything quite the same way in Major League Baseball history, and maybe you'll have some recollection. But first, before we talk about maybe going back to look at if there was anything comparable, I mean, just what was your thoughts on the whole evening?
It's been an emotional week for the Angels and for all of baseball, really. And it was very sad and untimely. Nobody really knows what happened. And quite frankly, it's to the point where it doesn't matter. This young man's gone. He's left behind a family and a team who are struggling to put the pieces back together and trying to pick up and move on. And what a night. They brought his family out to the mound for the ceremonial first pitch, and then they band together, and they were one out away from a perfect game.
They were, yeah.
Combined perfect game. It didn't happen, but still a combined no-hitter. It just shows how you can come together in such a terrible time and band together and work together.
Yeah, I mean, very emotional for the baseball team, and I sense that something good certainly has already happened in terms of them showing support for the family and for the memory of Tyler Skaggs, but I think even more is probably going to evolve out of what's happened already.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, the team coming together, this is something where you could see them build on it, maybe go on a run and, you know, put a couple winning streaks together and maybe compete into the fall. You know, they've put together a stronger team. They've got Mike Trout, who they've extended for 12 years at a zillion dollars, whatever it is that his contract is. And, you know, they've got a bright future with probably one of the best baseball players to ever live, if they can build around it. And this might give them a boost, sadly give them a boost, and maybe push them forward a bit.
I guess, you know, this isn't the same thing, but we saw a comparable type of emotional situation with the Ottawa Senators a couple of years ago, not to bring hockey talk into baseball talk, but you know, with Craig Anderson's wife, you know, with her cancer diagnosis and the team, you know, him taking some time off and then coming back and being absolutely ridiculous in the net for the Ottawa Senators, and of course they went on a significant run,
yeah,
sort of in her honor, if you will. Mm-hmm. Can you think of a baseball equivalent at all in this situation?
Well, as I mentioned before the show here, the Angels were playing the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
The second baseman for the Seattle Mariners is D. Gordon. 3 years ago, D. Gordon was a second baseman for the Florida Marlins. Sorry, Miami Marlins.
Miami Marlins, yeah.
When their superstar pitcher, a young guy named Jose Fernandez, was tragically killed in a boating accident
right on
a Saturday night. And they took a couple of days off to regroup. And when they came back, they did something similar where they all wore his jersey, his number. And D. Gordon was his best friend. D. Gordon was leadoff hitter. The very first pitch of the game, D. Gordon parked one in the outfield. And hit a home run. He's not known to be a home run hitter, but he did. It's just something there that was just pushing him to, and they went on to win the game, and it was very emotional. And you saw a similar scene to this, where you know, the team got together and
it's incredible, really.
It is. It is.
Yeah, it was.
And so tragic. And Anaheim lost a pitcher 10 years ago, hit by a drunk driver as well. So right. It's, you know, they're no strangers to tragedy.
I guess when you think of this in terms of the Toronto Blue Jays, we think maybe a little bit this year about Roy Halladay, the Jays honoring his memory by drafting his son in the 32nd round, the same number that Roy Halladay wore for the Toronto Blue Jays. Knowing that he was going on to college, Braden, and it wasn't going to sign, but they did it in honoring the Roy Halladay's memory and wanted to do that in honor of the family. I thought that was a nice gesture by the Jays.
Yeah, absolutely. And those gestures have kind of gone back to even last season. Braden, who was born in Canada, yeah, in Toronto, contacted the national junior team and said, I would like to work with you guys in the spring. They worked with them. And traditionally, the junior team plays the Jays in a spring training game, and Braden got to pitch, I believe it was an inning, maybe right, two. And, you know, a pretty emotional time then to see him coming out with a maple leaf on his hat and pitching against the Blue Jays. And there's a famous picture of his mom, Brandy, sitting in the stands holding a beer. And as he got his final out of the inning, she went, oh, good. Thank goodness it's over. So, you know, what the Jays have done to honor Roy's memory is has been pretty good.
And you know, I have to think too that you know, they might well draft him again if he yeah, performs well in
absolutely
college. And
yep,
you know, I'm quite sure that they'll be keeping a very close eye, mm-hmm, on yeah, Braden Halladay to see how he does. Yep. And they'd probably like nothing more than to have him in the Blue Jays family.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And of course, Roy's going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Maybe, is it this weekend?
I think it's coming up anyway. Yeah,
yeah, it's coming up this weekend, or this week, this next few weeks.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a neutral hat. He's not going to wear a Blue Jays hat.
What a shame in a way. I think he should have wore a Blue Jays hat.
Yeah, I did too. But, you know, I understand Roy's not here.
Right.
And so it was up to the family.
Yeah.
And they had to make a decision. And through all of this over the last couple of years, both teams have really treated them well. And I'm sure that his widow and his son see that. And it was probably a really tough decision. And quite frankly, I was angry when I first heard it, when it was
yeah,
first announced.
Yeah.
And I quickly calmed down and I thought of what she has gone through and how it would have been an extremely difficult decision to make.
Well, we know, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies organization, a class organization, but was led for a long time by former Jays GM Pat Gillick, which
yes,
is, you know, the impetus of how Roy Halladay ended up
yep,
with the Philadelphia Phillies. I think at that time he was maybe an advisor for the team as opposed to their GM, I think, but
yes,
but definitely involved in that whole process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's nothing but a class act, and, you know, the Phillies,
absolutely,
he wouldn't be associated with anyone that isn't. And, so,
absolutely,
you know, it doesn't surprise me. And I guess in that way, you understand their decision.
Absolutely. 100%. And like I said, I was emotional when I heard that it was going to be a neutral hat.
Me too.
And disappointed. But my thoughts quickly turned to his widow and his family. And I thought, you know what? If I were in that spot, I think I may have made the same decision. So
the one thing that we have no argument about is, He's a surefire Hall of Famer. I mean,
absolutely,
his numbers, he was one of the best, if not the best, in the game for a very long time, and had such durability as well. And when yeah, you think of Roy Halladay, you know, 200 innings, you know, 18 to 22 wins consistently, striking out a ton of guys, just being a dominant pitcher. In particular, maybe for, you know, a 4 or 5 year span, he was as good as anybody in the game, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You knew if you had tickets,
it was going to be a treat.
Yeah, to a Roy Halladay start, you were going to get a show. And I actually was lucky enough to sit behind home plate, quite a few rows up, but still in that section, for a start against the Kansas City Royals one night. I want to say about 2008-ish.
Right.
And he just dealt, and it was unreal to watch the ball dance as it was coming out of his hand.
On the Jays conversation, the Jays sent Rowdy Tellez down this week. I mean, he had an unbelievable first month of the season, Rob, and his numbers overall, they declined almost monthly, it seemed. But overall, I mean, 227, that's nothing to write home about at all. But 14 home runs, 40 RBIs. But here's the two things that to me were concerning. He had walked only 17 times, but struck out 83. Bat control, certainly an issue. Mm-hmm. And just anticipating pitches, I think, for Rowdy Tellez, when he gets a hold of one, there's no question he can do damage. He's got a ton of power, but it's just about recognizing what's coming quickly and reacting to it. And I mean, just your thoughts on that particular move.
I think you basically said it all right there with not recognizing the pitches, taking some bad swings, and really not controlling his at-bats and not being patient and jumping a lot on first pitches, bad pitches, high pitches. He really isn't – he needs some time to get back down, maybe get some pressure off of him as far as the limelight and just work with some people down behind the scenes and see what happens. It's tough to see it happen, but, you know, down the road, you hear a lot of pundits and people in the Jays media circles who see Vladdy Jr. moving to first base,
right,
and Tellez being a full-time DH. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to be a full-time DH, he's got to hit the ball.
Right.
Plain and simple. And he's got to know how to hit it. You know, Edgar Martinez, he was a professional hitter,
yeah,
straight up, and a deadly hitter for many, many years.
300 hitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need a guy like that who's – we need to go down there and let him cook a little bit and get a little bit – get some time in just with some instructors and whatnot.
You know, when we look at what the Jays have done this year, I mean, they've had extremely good success in sending guys down and then them rebounding. I mean, we look no further than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I mean, yep, he didn't actually – you know, he got sent down very early in this season, and he's come back and been, well, a house on fire, really. I mean, he's been nothing short of sensational. You know, his numbers are leading the team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all he needed to do was just go down and get out of the spotlight and work with some people. He did the same last year, too. He went down for a little bit, came back up, and he had a really great second half. And I look to Gurriel Jr. to have another great second half. And on that note, Teoscar Hernandez went down. He's come back up.
Nice home run last night.
Yeah, a couple bright spots for him, but for the most part, it seems to be the same old Teoscar. And I think at some point the Jays are going to have to try to figure out what they're going to do with him long term.
You know what? I mean, Teoscar Hernandez is one of those guys that he just has all the tools, and it just isn't completely putting it together yet. But no. If they can ever harness all the natural skill, like he just has all the tools to be an awesome baseball player, and he's just not quite reaching that potential yet. But I mean, there's so many signs that he could be a great baseball mm-hmm. player. And you know what? When you look back at what they gave up to get him, that trade's worked out pretty well for the Jays.
Yep.
I think they're gonna continue to invest in him a bit longer. Because, I mean, obviously defensively, I mean, he's got tremendous speed. But, I mean, the power that he has, too, if he can just put it all together, Rob, I just feel like this guy could be a piece that they could use for, you know, this future team that's going to be a really good baseball team.
Yep, absolutely. You know, is he a middle-of-the-order hitter? He might be a little bit lower, but still, he does have all these pieces. It's a matter of getting, I guess, maybe to pay attention. I don't know what it is. What's going on between the ears? That's yeah. what I mean. You
Is it, is it focus, maybe, Rob? Well, I don't know.
That's what you have to wonder. When you see him running in the in left field, and he just looks lost, chasing balls all over the place. And that's
but yet he's so fast.
In his home park,
yeah,
where you should have a good feel for, you know, the field. And I mean, Rogers Center is pretty straightforward. There aren't any goofy things like the Green Monster or anything like that.
Right.
So I don't know. I really don't know what the answer is with him. I mean, he'll take the time to shower everybody with sunflower seeds after they hit a home run and go nuts.
Yeah.
But you
got to do more than that.
Yeah, you got to do more than that. You got to be more than just a good teammate. You need to be able to play.
I mean, another thing that has come up this particular week is a lot of conversation about Bo Bichette. You know, he's tearing up AAA since he came back from injury. You know, he made some comments to local media about the fact that if he's not ready now, he doesn't know what he has to do to be ready. But I mean, this is really about service time and control of a player. If they don't bring him up before September 1st, they have control of him for an additional year. And that matters 7 years from now, right? Or 6 years from now.
Yeah.
I think they're getting some criticism for maybe how they're handling this particular player. But it was really no different in some other scenarios with the Jays that way too.
Absolutely. There's two things I think that the Jays, when they're letting him sit and stew the way he is, because he's obviously getting antsy.
Yeah.
That they need to keep in mind. One, there's going to be a CBA renegotiated soon.
Yeah.
In that CBA, I'm pretty sure this area
is going to be addressed.
And it's going to be an issue, a big issue.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be some players that aren't going to be happy with what has gone on. I can't imagine Vladdy Jr. was real happy last September when he was sitting in Buffalo and watching all his teammates come up to Toronto while he had to sit. And then they said, oh, by the way, we're going to send you to the Fall League. The other thing is you need to look over at the Chicago Cubs. Chris Bryant, they did this with him. And he is one of their star players. He refuses to sign an extension now.
Right.
And you don't know what he's thinking.
But does it leave a bad taste in your mouth?
That must be in the back of his mind. That, you know what? You kind of put me off there. I'm going to put you off. You know? So it's a couple of things that the Jays need to keep in mind, I think, when they're doing this. That this rule might not even exist by the time these guys become free agents. So maybe there's no point in keeping them down there, right? Because this all might change as they're going. And I'm sure they want to keep the labor peace going that they've had for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
And so it's probably going to get renegotiated, and this clause or whatever it is may end up being pushed out of the CBA altogether.
Great segue, Rob, because we were going to talk next about the fact that, there needs to be some changes in Major League Baseball, and maybe some of the things that you'd like to see in terms of rule changes with Major League Baseball. And of course, we just addressed that particular aspect that's interesting. And I think they will have a serious conversation and some addressing to that. What are a couple areas that you'd like to see? If you could, wave a magic wand and change some rules or tinker with baseball, what is it you'd like to see that would happen?
Well, we know the pitch clock is coming.
Right.
They're using it in AAA. I believe it's AAA now.
Yeah.
It's working. We know it's coming. That's going to be interesting because pitchers can then, their strategies are going to change.
Right.
You're not going to see as many throws over to first base and whatnot.
Yeah, I wonder how that'll work, actually.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
we'll have to see. There's talk of the robot umpires. That's being used, I believe, in AA or the Atlantic League or something like that. Basically, there's still an umpire behind the plate, but he's being assisted with a radar.
Right.
And they're giving him an idea with what the strike zone is and what the call should be.
How do you feel about that in general?
I remember Bud Selig once saying, I don't want to take the human aspect out of the game. And I understand that, but at the same time, if a bad call costs my team the World Series, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Yeah.
You know, going back, you know, 99 Stanley Cup, his foot was in the crease.
Yes, it was.
You know, and you know, I think I'm okay with it because there are some umpires out there that are pretty wonky and pretty free and easy with the strike zone.
I guess at the end of the day, Rob, the truth is most fans want to just see the right call.
That's right.
And so whatever aid it is that gets there, whether it be video replay or this kind of robotics type of, mm-hmm. of situation, they want the right call the majority of the time. And if there's an issue, they want to have a lever to get to the right call. And,
yep.
you know, I guess if these are the tools that kind of get us in that direction, maybe that makes it a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then another rule that they're throwing around is the ability to steal first base.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I saw it on Deadspin this week on Twitter. So basically, I can't remember what league it is. Is it the Northern League?
I think so.
Yeah, something like that. Basically, how it works, it's kind of like strike three with a passed ball. That if you've struck out, you can still run to first and get the base. But in this case, it's on any count at all. So as an example, it could be one ball, one strike, and the ball goes past the catcher. And if you run to first and beat it before he gets there, you get the base. And basically, yep. that's what they call stealing first. I mean, as I guess I'd call myself, you know, a traditionalist, but you know, I'm happy to see changes that make the game better,
mm-hmm.
but this one's just a little out there for me. I think I'm not sure what I think.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a little weird. I'm reminded of the XFL where yes. they used to throw the ball in the middle of the field or place it in the middle of the field, and I think it was the wide receivers had to run to try and catch it. The first person to get to the ball were the ones that got possession or got to choose. Possession or kickoff. It kind of reminds me of that. Like, it just seems a little XFL WWE to me.
Right.
It seems a little weird. But when you think about it, it would keep the pitcher and catcher on their toes.
Yeah.
At all times. The strategy would change in the game. It might add a little bit more excitement. But I think you're also maybe putting some people at risk because now you're going to probably get headfirst slides into first to try and beat throws. You know, pitchers maybe are going to try fielding the ball a little bit more and getting involved with the plays, which, you know, we saw with Matt Shoemaker earlier this year, torn ACL, gone for the season. So I'm kind of on the fence with it. I'm curious to see what it could be, but, you know, I don't want to get too crazy with all these rule changes.
Right.
I understand them wanting to speed the games up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we watched the Raptors in the playoffs this year go on a tear. I wasn't a huge basketball fan. I'll admit I'm a bit of a bandwagon jumper when it came to that. And as we watched these playoff games, I remember turning to my wife and saying, hour and a half, 2 hours, you know, it's over. And it happened pretty quick. Like, it was just bang, bang, bang. Even though you had times where the clock was stopping and so forth, and there were timeouts and all that, where a baseball game can go on for 4 hours mm-hmm. easily. A Yankees-Red Sox game, if you've ever sat down and watched it, get comfortable, get snacks.
It's going to take a while.
Plan your bathroom breaks because you're going to be there a while. And so I can understand why they're wanting to speed things up a bit because we have shorter attention spans now as a society. So
I guess the one thing with it is baseball is entertainment. It's our entertainment. And at the end of the day, if it makes the game more entertaining, it's something that we should look at possibly.
Yep, absolutely.
Because that's really what it comes down to. That's why we pay our money and we want to cheer for our team. We're entertained. And that's what sports is essentially entertainment.
Yep.
So from that point of view, you know, I guess we remain a little bit, we'll keep our minds open and see how it kind of develops in this particular league with this particular, you know, stealing first issue. The other thing I was going to talk about, Rob, is, you know, with the rule changes, potentially, I mean, is it time to not have a DH or to have a DH in both leagues? Is it time to be uniform with both leagues? I know it's a question that, you know, certainly people in the American League have a certain opinion. People in the National League maybe a different opinion. But what is your thought on it?
You know, I remember Max Scherzer went from Detroit to Washington, and he signed with Washington. And shortly afterwards, he said, people don't pay the big bucks to come and see me hit.
Right.
They want to see a professional hitter.
Yep.
Madison Baumgartner, who's in San Francisco, heard that and said, hold on. If you don't want to hit, you shouldn't have signed that big contract in the National League. Go back to the American League. I love hitting. So you get both sides of it.
Right.
I hate the interleague play where American League pitchers go into a National League park and then they're expected to hit. We saw Marco Estrada a couple of years ago, hurt his back,
yep,
taking a swing. You know, there's just too many risks involved with it when they're not doing it all the time.
Exactly.
Max Scherzer is another guy. Yeah. He was taking a bunt in BP, took one off face and broke his nose. Went out and pitched.
But your point as well.
Yeah,
mate.
Pitched very well. Yep. The next night, but still, he had two black eyes while he was doing it. So, you know, I really sit on the fence with it. I think you're going to see a DH in both leagues eventually. I think that's the way they're moving.
I do too.
Because it creates more jobs, I think, for hitters, and it lets the pitchers be. And I think in the long run, if the players are going to have their say, the pitchers are going to be protected. They don't want to be hurt. They don't want to be at risk to be hurt because this arm is worth $200 million.
Yeah.
And I really shouldn't be up there with my opponent, who I'm pitching against, throwing 105 at my head. You know, I think that's what's going to happen, is they're going to move to DH. And much like interleague play, eventually, people are going to get used to it, accept it, and down the road, they'll talk about the fact that the National League used to have their pitchers hitting well long after the American League, and it'll just be a thing of the past.
Yeah, I think you're probably right in that front for sure. And you know, it might take another 10 years for that to happen, but I think ultimately, it's very possible that that will occur. Lots of trade rumors, of course, swirling. The July 31st trade deadline is upon us fairly soon, of course. You know, the biggest trade chip, Toronto really has two, Marcus Stroman and Ken Giles, who, you know, sounds like he's going to pitch probably tonight or mm-hmm. soon anyway, and may be recovered from his injury problem. But, I mean, when you look at both of those, I mean, I fully expect both of those guys will be gone from the Toronto Blue Jays July 31st. In a way, I'm disappointed with that because I think both of them could be good pieces moving forward. In particular, Stroman maybe more than Giles. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's just the way a rebuilding team goes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I said it last week. I read somewhere. 2 to 3 years from now, the Jays are going to be looking for a guy in his late 20s, early 30s, who can be an anchor on the rotation, who can pitch well, and you can rely on. And then you got to turn around and convince him to come up to Toronto.
They got one right now.
And they got the guy right there who wants an extension.
Yeah.
I think he's now to the point where he's so ticked off with what's gone on. He's got a chip on his shoulder, and I think he wants out now.
Yeah.
The way he's talking, he's kind of talking his way out of town, but you know, it's just, that's the guy's right here. Like, why not treat him a little bit better? And he might even have given you a bit of a hometown discount to stay. Giles, on the other hand, I my heart will break a little bit to see him go, because I think he's actually genuinely a good dude. Mm-hmm. But he's got a lot of problems emotionally and whatnot. But he's going to be a hot commodity.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the Red Sox, who are just, their bullpen is just a dumpster fire, yeah, and they need help big time. And Ken Giles would be a guy for them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the one thing I would look towards is the activity of the Atlanta Braves towards the Toronto Blue Jays. I think Alex Anthopoulos is going to target Marcus Stroman, a player he knows incredibly well and was part of the drafting process of Marcus Stroman. Yeah. And I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see that come to fruition, especially given that the Atlanta Braves farm system is one of the strongest in baseball, if not the strongest in baseball.
I think it's number two behind, yeah, San Diego.
Yep.
Yep. And, you know, the other thing is we know Alex is okay with giving up young pitching to get good pieces for a run, because that's what happened.
Yes.
We've got some young pitchers that were from our system that are now out scattered all over between Colorado, Detroit, the Mets, and whatnot. So I would actually think that they will, Atlanta will target Stroman. Whether or not the two management teams will do a deal, I don't know. But I would be quite fine with seeing him go to Atlanta. I think he'd be a good fit, a really good fit for their rotation. They got some young guys who are really talented and quite exciting to watch.
You know, you mentioned Alex's history with making trades for young players, for veterans to help his team. And, of course, one of the names being bantied about in the rumor mill is actually one of those guys that he traded, Noah Syndergaard. You know, the Yankees are supposedly eyeing Noah Syndergaard, which who can blame him? I mean, he's a heck of a ball player. He's a great pitcher. But, of course, was part of the R.A. Dickey trade by the Jays. And at the end of the day, I mean, they got decent value out of R.A. Dickey, you know, but Noah Syndergaard's a heck of a ball player.
Take me back to 2012. I'll make that trade again.
Yeah, I think one of those. It's good for everybody, right?
The guy was – Dickey was coming off a Cy Young,
yep,
award-winning season. He was a knuckleballer. He had experience. He seemed like a good fit because they were trying to put together a veteran core to make a run. So people lament that Syndergaard was ours, but now he's not. I don't – these two teams, the Yankees and the Mets, rarely make trades with each other.
Right.
He'd have to cut his hair to go to New York.
Right.
Because they've got those weird
rules.
Rules. I think if the Mets were smart, they would be targeting a San Diego or an Atlanta. I can't see Atlanta because they're in their same division, but you know, a San Diego, maybe a Tampa, who have said we're gonna be
moving
buying
guys, yeah.
We're going to be buying this year. You know, it'd be a good fit there, and they'd have pieces to send back to the Mets. The only piece that I can see that New York having that might be attractive to them is Clint Frazier, right, who has kind of been deemed expendable in the outfield because of all these superstars that, mm-hmm, the Yankees have. And his name keeps coming up for Stroman. It's just it doesn't make any sense, though, because the Jays need pitching.
Yeah.
And they don't need another star outfielder DH type when they've got enough of those as it is.
They do. You know, you bring up pitching, and, you know, as we film this, you know, last night, Jacob Wagesback, I thought, looked pretty good for the Jays, yep, in his first ever Major League Baseball start. He had, of course, came in relief in a previous appearance and got his first Major League win. Yep. But I thought he acquitted himself pretty nice. He faced a bit of adversity at times, yep, last night, but I felt he battled and showed some grit there and was able to win for the Jays last night. And he looks like a guy that maybe... a solution for, you know, fifth starter job, or certainly in the bullpen, but a guy that maybe is going to be an arm for them.
Quite possibly. And, you know, a guy that they could keep around long term and be a piece that they build around. They've got Pearson in the minors, who is throwing
lights out.
Yeah, ridiculous.
102
stuff.
Miles an hour or something.
Yeah, just insane. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to him coming up. Reed Foley, Ryan Borecki, seems like he's going to be.
They're probably September call-ups, I would think.
Yeah, they're going to be September call-ups, yeah. And for the future, absolutely. There's a bright future for a few of them. Then we've got, as I heard one pundit put it today, a bunch of fifth starters. But I think last night we saw a guy that could really be, you know, a back of the rotation guy who could come out of the bullpen and be that.
He certainly, you know, stepped forward in his first couple of appearances and looks like a guy that is capable of maybe being a number five starter or certainly a solid bullpen arm for three innings kind of thing in long relief. We'll see what happens with Jacob Wagisback, but off to a decent start for sure.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, they were discussing this on the Jays broadcast last night about juiced balls this year. And they were referring to, and I mean, there's been a number of Major League Baseball players that have talked about this. A couple of pitchers have been very outspoken about it as well.
Justin Verlander,
maybe the most so, with his comments, with some expletives involved in that, in those comments as well. But, you know, when you look at the numbers this year, and one of the numbers that they prefaced with this discussion was the fact that right now there are 46 players on pace for at least 30 home runs this year. The all-time record in one season is 47. So they're one away from that right now. And certainly, you know, given some of the players that have commented about this, I mean, I think there's something to it. I feel like there's something to it. I mean, how do you feel about this particular thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, MLB has basically come out and said, yeah, we fixed the ball. We've kind of dressed things up, but we're not going to tell you anymore. I think back to when I was a kid, where we would take aluminum bats and golf balls and just knock them and they go for miles, you know? And it seems like that's what they've done, is they've doctored this a little bit more to be, have a little more bounce to it, a little bit more pep to it. The pitchers are coming out. Starting last year, there was record number of pitchers with blister issues.
Right.
They're saying the seams are different. The texture of the ball is different. And now they're saying, why are you messing with our, you know, with our stats just to make sure that we get more home runs? What it comes down to is they couldn't juice the players anymore, so now they're juicing the ball, right, is what it's coming down to. And it's not illegal to do that, right? So where it was before, the players were all on drugs through the 90s and early 2000s, and they were all walking around with these great big muscles, and they were clubbing the snot out of the ball. Now that it's going the other way, they made the ball different. You know what? Adjust. That's all you can do. Adjust. I mean, hockey players, the goalie equipment changes almost seasonally. You know, adjust and play your game. That's all you can do. It's for entertainment value, and it's probably working.
You know, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he made some comments to the effect of, you know, the owners who I work for, they, if you're in their meetings, they don't want more home runs, which I think is pretty laughable on the face of it, actually, that they would, you know, no, nobody wants more entertainment in the game. Like that comment to me is, you know, a little bit brain dead, I thought.
Yeah. Manfred is a funny guy. He wants to make all these changes to the game. It kind of reminds me of the NFL not admitting that concussions can happen and have long-term effects. He's kind of doing the same thing, where he's not really coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we know we're going to change things to make it more entertaining and whatnot. He's a funny guy. He's certainly not Bud Selig, who I kind of despise, because I've always felt like he helped run the Expos out of town. So, but he Selig backed the steroid era.
Yeah.
He knew full well what was going on. So, it's interesting. And Manfred's been around for about 4 or 5 years now. Right. So, I'd still give him a little bit of time yet and see what happens.
I don't know. It was just kind of an offhand throwaway comment that, you know, you take 10 seconds of his comment, I guess. But I just thought the context was a bit laughable of how he was referring to that.
Exactly.
As if, you know, obviously nobody could be in those meetings to know what any of them are saying.
Yeah,
you know. So, he's going to try to represent what he thinks the public wants to hear in terms of what their position is. But no question, I think the ball is changed and textured differently for the purpose of allowing more home runs. It's difficult if you're a pitcher to have some of your stats get skewered because that costs you money in terms of contract negotiations. I feel for those folks for sure. And there's probably going to be people that, you know, might have hit 22 home runs that are going to hit 30 and maybe get an extra $1.5 million a year for that reason. So exactly. There are some ramifications to it that, you know, it's some people benefit and some people don't. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And, you know, it's to be in an arbitration hearing, say with a guy like Noah Syndergaard or somebody, and have the team come out and say, well, you gave up X amount of home runs. You don't know if really that's fair, really, because the game, the league has changed things against him.
Yeah.
Right? You know? So, yeah, it's a tough call. It is. And personally, I'm okay with it because I love the long ball. Chicks dig the long ball. Isn't that the old line from the 90s?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm okay with that. I'd like to see another 1998, but without the muscle heads on steroids, you know?
You know, I think we all think home runs, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but I think a lot of people think home runs are entertaining.
Yep.
They enjoy them. They enjoy seeing them. When you go to a ball game, they want to see a couple. I think that's without a doubt most people are looking for when they go. So, you know, from an entertainment standpoint, that part is working. I think there's no question about that.
And I want to see Vladdy Jr. just hit a ton.
Well, and I mean, you know, he hit a ton at the All-Star Game festivities, but one home run in his last 22 games.
Yeah, yeah. Give him time. That's all I can say is be patient. Mike Trout went down in his first season. He got sent back down.
Right.
I mean, it's just
he's going to be a star. He's 20 years old.
Yep. Roy Halladay went back down
and figured
things out.
All the way to A-ball.
Yep. He went right down and was at Dunedin. He wasn't even pitching in games.
Yep.
And he was working with Mel Queen and they changed everything. So it's
an evolution. It takes
absolutely,
time, right?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. Kid's 20 years old.
Final thought on what you'd like to see from the Toronto Blue Jays in the next 14 days in terms of what they may do and what they may add to their farm system and or team?
Pitching. I think just assure me that you're going to have some pitching in the future for what's happening around them, because there's a very talented group coming together here, but we need the people on the mound. We need the pitching. And you know what? If Jensen is a great catcher but only hits 200, I don't care, as long as he's a good catcher. We still have this group of talented fielders and hitters. All we need some pitching. Let's go out and get some, and I can sleep a little bit better at night as a Jays fan then, I think.
So. Well, and it may be pitchers for 2 years from now, but but I have no doubt that they are going to get some pitchers in some of the trades they're going to make.
Absolutely.
Well, that's another edition of Baseball Talk. A great chat tonight. Really appreciate Wayne Martin joining us as well, and we will see you next week right here on Baseball Talk.